What's going on, everybody? It's Slay Diddy, a.k.a. Professor Slay, a.k.a. Mr. WGXE, and you are listening to WGXE Acre 90.7 FM and WGXE.org. Listen in, y'all.
All together now, the 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday newscast for Greene and Columbia counties is looking for contributors. Are you a retired weather expert? Have you always wanted to cover high school sports? Do you attend your own town meetings regularly and possess a cell phone? Then you could be a contributor to All Together Now. Send your idea for a regular segment or tell us if you would like to cover a specific beat. And WGXE can share technological skills, reporting rules, sunshine laws, and helpful hints to help report on your community.
Underwriting support is provided by Tobacco Free Action of Columbia and Greene Counties, working to protect children from tobacco marketing in stores. The more kids see, the more likely they are to smoke. To learn more and find out how you can help, visit www.seenenoughtobacco.org.
Okay, I think we're live. I think we're live, and we're in the midst of one more pledge drive, the harvest, one more pledge drive for this wonderful radio station, this community station. My name is George Spencer. My show is on the fourth Thursday of the month, and it's from 2 to 3 o'clock, and it's called Art, Etc. And Richard Roth, who's been doing this a lot longer than I have, is in your show.
My show is called The Passage, and I've got an interview lined up, which is shorter than usual, but we can go in and out of that as the time goes by.
Oh yeah. Who's the interview?
The interview is with Margaret Soliski, artist in Hudson.
Oh, wonderful.
And I can start that whenever we are.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Is that queued up? Yeah. Okay, is the mic still live? I guess so. I have to cue this up again for some reason.
Okay. In the meantime, let me tell you a little bit about some of the premiums we have. And we have one from John Doe Records and Books, where if you pledge $100, you will receive a $50 credit. And John Doe Records and Books is located very close to where we're broadcasting from. And so John Doe is at 434 Warren Street. It's open Monday through Thursday from noon to 6 p.m. Friday through Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So they're one of our supporters that...
This
of our generous supporters.
Passage on WGXE, and I am here with Margaret Soliski in her studio in Hudson. Margaret, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, the first question I usually ask people is, how did you end up in Hudson?
So are you on the air, George? Or are we on the air with the tape?
Bond Street, downtown. And we found that we kept renting out more and more of our space in order to support ourselves as artists. And one day we walked through this space and realized that everybody was living in our loft.
So this is Margaret Soliski.
Doing their work, and Tony was teaching at Parsons, and I was doing graphic design work. And it just
George, can you cover for a minute? Something is
trying to be in New York.
No, it's all right, I guess.
Our work and the art.
There seem to be two things playing at once, but.
So we
hopefully we can now hear Margaret Soliski. Could you turn that up
a little
bit?
We'll move out of the city, and Tony will tell you, drew a line or a circle around and figured how far out could we get, and Tony still had to teach courses. So we were attracted to both the architecture and the train stopped here. Those are two big things. But that was in 1989. Hudson was a very different place.
1989?
Yeah. All our friends came up from the city and to visit us and said, what are you doing? You can bring your daughter up here. It was a very intense scene, and Warren Street was all boarded up, and it was a lot of people living in storefronts then because there were no shops to occupy those spaces. There was a lot of drug dealing going on, but it still had its beautiful architecture. And the antique peelers were just beginning to sort of take over and revitalize it, so... We were just so amazed by the full history of architecture on Warren Street. So that was the attraction.
And so Tony then got a job, I guess, at the college.
The college, right.
I'll talk to him about that later.
Yeah.
And what did you do in those days?
Well, it was an interesting time for graphic design work. I was supporting my sculpture with doing paste-ups, mechanicals, and graphic layout. And at that time, the computer was just beginning to replace T-squares and triangles and ruling pens, all these fabulous tools that I really enjoyed working with, you know, slide rules and stuff. And I really didn't want to hop onto the computer thing. It was just so cold. It was just not particularly interesting. So I moved up here, and I did do some jobs for a while, taking them down to the city. But then I apprenticed with Tad Fallon in antique restoration out in Copaic. He now has a business, Fallon Wilkinson. He's a conservator of antique and wood furniture. And then I started to work with Sotheby's. So I worked in their lacquer department.
Doing restoration?
Doing restoration. Pretty much trained by Tad Fallon out in Copaic. And his family has the Copaic auction. And Tad was going to school in conservation work, so he needed somebody to sort of run his shop while he was going off, I think it was 4 weeks every so often, to the conservation program he was in. So I helped him out, and he taught me restoration work. I've always enjoyed manipulating materials and working with materials in my hand, so... It was, I feel very lucky that I was able to move up here and find something that is agreeable to me to support my sculpture.
And then eventually you got that pretty long and involved job of restoration work at Olama.
Yes, well, also when I was working with Tad, after he then decided to open his own business, and I left him and worked for Sotheby's, and then I went off on my own. I decided I had enough of working full-time in a shop, and I wanted to be home in my studio and do work. And I started to volunteer for the state of New York up at Peebles Island, where they treat a lot of the furniture that's in the historic collection. And that's how, because Olama is a state historic site, so that's how that came about, was working with Joyce Zucker, who at that time was the head paintings conservator at Peebles Island.
And how long did you work at Olama?
That was a project to conserve the stencils. And so we did it year by year, and it was wonderful because being able to be in Olama when nobody else was there, watch it get light in the morning, watch it get dark at night, because it was during the winter that I did the court hall. I did the downstairs and two parlors, and then eventually they got funding to do the upstairs as well. So it was over several years, because you always do studies and tests, and there's a lot of preparation and testing what will work before you actually go in and start to treat something.
And were you matching colors?
Well, what we tried to do was clean the surface because there was a lot of soot from the furnaces and coal-fired environment. They kept the windows open. Flies came in. There was flies spattering up by the ceiling. So initially what you did try to do is clean the surface so that when you restore the losses, your touch-up matches. But it was proved to be a very difficult surface to clean. I worked with the painting department at Peebles Island, and we tried a lot, but back then he was mixing his own paints, and you know, it was a suspensions of all different kinds of materials, so there weren't really any successful cleaning systems that we came up with. It's a matte surface. It's very sensitive to any solvents or water. One thing that we did do that was interesting was laser cleaning, which you use a laser beam that ablates the dirt off the surface into a slide, like those little slips that go over slides when you're viewing something under the microscope. You know, they're tiny. They're like a half an inch square. So it was sort of like cleaning a football field with a needle. It really wasn't practical. But they've since been using lasers more in the field, so perhaps it's a possibility in the future.
Now, were you working alone?
Yes. Once we had done the studies, did the reports, then somebody has to execute the work, which involved injecting with a needle behind each flake of paint that was just hanging there on the wall, and also detecting imminent losses. So when you see just a little bit of puckering through magnifying glasses, all magnifying glasses, then you try to break into it with a needle and drop a little bit of glue behind it, and then you take a small piece of paper and you iron this down. We're talking like 1/8 of an inch at the most chips of paint. And then
you said iron.
Iron it down because the solvent gets behind the cleaving paint.
And so you're literally using heat then to...
Then you use heat after you've injected it, you've wiped off the surplus and sort of tap it down, and then you gently heat each little section. Then wipe off the excess. And then there are losses that you sometimes try to inject and the flake falls away. Or there were also losses, and then in that case you in paint it to match the surrounding.
What sort of paint did you use?
I think it was an acrylic polymer. It was B72 with dry pigments mixed into it. Toxic things like cyclosol and xylene.
Oh, yes.
So it's not only the magnifier on your face, but there's also a mask, and then there's headphones because it was hundreds of hours of injection. But a very satisfying project. I go back occasionally to see if there are any further losses, and I think it's been about 7 years now. I see only one further loss, so I was pretty good at detecting them. They had also just done a repointing of the building, so moisture that had migrated through to those stencils was then secure. So it was a good time. They also put a new HVAC system into it. So everything was controlled, closed up and controlled. So it was a perfect time to conserve those stencils because then the environment was stable.
Now, was this something you'd done as an artist? Or was it
no, those materials are... I try not to use toxic materials in my work, although I still use it in conservation restoration work. Those were materials that were chosen. That was a system chosen by the state, by the paintings department, through trial and error, what was the best way to... I did the work, but I worked with the conservators there who they decided how we would treat the stencils.
A sigh of relief and a sense of accomplishment when it was all done.
It was, yeah, because I also gave a lot of time for doing those studies as well.
So you were going up to Peebles Island.
Yes, and also working with them at Olana, making tests. We did maps that indicated what kind of losses, what kind of cracks there were all over the wall. Sort of, it's almost like snorkeling across a surface where you're just detecting every little thing and mapping it out with colored pencils.
Meanwhile, had you always been doing photography?
I've always been doing sculpture, but I've been using photography in my work for a long time.
And these are your own photographs?
Yes, they're all my own photographs, but I don't think of myself as a photographer. Photography for me is just sort of like another material for doing my work. And the image is there, and it's a known system. The landscape is a linear thing that we're all familiar with. It has foreground and background and background. And so
let's take a break here.
Okay, so we're back, and we want to talk a little bit about the pledge drive that we're in the midst of. This is one of the few radio stations that I know of that has this incredible diversity, not only of subject matter, but also of the people who are involved with it, and does this 24 hours a day. And in the latter part of the day, there's incredibly interesting audio arts, if that's the right term. And this is something that's hard to find. Let me give you the number to call to make a pledge. And this is what we're about today. The number is 518-697-7400. And you can also make a pledge online at wgxc.org/donate. I think it's important that all listeners understand that if for whatever reasons you're not in a position to make a pledge, and that's certainly understandable given what's going on in the world today, that's just fine, and continue to listen to your favorite shows. And if at some time things change, then that'd be wonderful, and you make a donation if it is something you can do. To people who are making donations, we're very happy with every donation we get. That is because we think this is a community radio. It's not community radio for people who have a lot of money to make big donations, and it's not community radio just for people who make medium-sized donations, and it's not community radio for people who make small donations. All donations are equal in our eyes. All we're really interested in is that those people, those listeners who can, do make contributions.
And please do make it as large as possible.
Yes.
No, all kidding aside.
And I am going to try right now, and don't know if this is going to work, but I'm going to try and call the radio station and see if I can get them on the phone here. And let me see if this is working, because I've had an experience here in the past where I've brought a check in with me, and I've gotten home and realized I still have it in my pocket. And I hope to get hold of somebody there, and I'm going to call there and ask them to please remind me to give them the check that I brought today for the radio station. So, Richard, do you have anything that...
please do donate whatever you can, and keep this station on the air, because nobody really gets paid. It's a volunteer effort, and we depend on this very meager budget, which is supplied by our listeners who make donations. That's 697-7400. You can also go online to wgxc.org. And also, of course, online you can listen to the live feed anytime. We're always on 24 hours a day from midnight to 6. It's Transmission Arts and all day Saturday. The rest of the time it's either live programming or pretty much locally produced programming. So please do your share, your part. Thank you.
Yeah, I think anybody who listens to radio, television, cable, whatever it is, realizes that there's all kinds of news out there. There's all kinds of information out there. Some of it, it's quite clear what the what the purposes are of the news that's being presented. And we think that what we do here, and I think this is what community radio does, is to try and present as broad-based as possible views on what's going on in the world, because we think that the more informed people are and the more they know about what's going on, the better world we're going to end up with. And we cannot do this without your support. Everything that anybody cares to give to us is very gladly accepted. I had an interesting experience getting in here. I normally leave myself about 45 minutes to get here, and I always end up getting here late. I'm getting here early, rather. And I left with plenty of time to drive in here this afternoon. And as soon as I got on 9H and got about halfway between the Kinderhook exit or entrance where I got on and Route 66, there was a traffic accident. And we sat there, and I sat and I watched my clock and I watched time go by. And I realized this is getting a little bit closer. Finally, luckily, no one was hurt in this. It was somebody who had sort of gotten off the road and was okay. So I got down to 66, started down there, and the guys from the cable company were cutting all the trees and the branches around the telephone wires. And I was like, wait a second, this is getting even closer and closer. And then I realized as I got into Hudson proper that I was hitting every single red light there was.
Red lights in Hudson are always very slow.
Yeah, it's very slow. Fortunately, the closer I got to the station, the more green lights I got. And I guess this is one way of saying that we are in the midst of this drive. It's picking up speed. We're going to get to where we want to get. We're getting more and more green lights, and those green lights are contributions from our kind listeners. And we just want to encourage you to continue to make these contributions. We have, and I was not aware of the extent of this, but I have in front of me an enormous list of locations where WGXC has done remote broadcasts. And I'm just looking at the list of schools. And we've done broadcasts at Chatham High School, Hudson High School, the John E. Edwards Primary School in Hudson, the Carol Dunham High School, Durham High School, and the Catskill High School, which brings me to another thing about this radio station, which I think is tremendously important. And that is this radio station, I believe, probably gives more time to young people to participate in radio broadcasting, to learn about it, to get to express their own opinions. And I think this is the kind of initiative that everybody in our listening area should be interested in supporting.
And can we go back to a little bit of regular programming now?
It allows you
this
to
is Margaret Soliski
to ambiguate the space and the distance and insert various things and in this case mount them on aluminum and bend them and make them architectural. I think I was, but these pieces I did is on aluminum that are bent. I did when I just had my studio built, and I was working with Grigory Fetyev, who designed the building for me. So the process of working with him in my space, I kept trying to think of how is the landscape framed and how does this go around the corner? And I really think that the building and the process of thinking about the kind of studio I wanted influenced a lot of these pieces. But I've always been interested in architecture and monumental things.
And did you go to art school?
I went to Bennington College in Vermont for undergraduate, and then I did what's called the Whitney Museum Independent Studio Program. They have a program in New York that's a studio art program, and there's also an art history part to it as well, and I did the studio art. And I was a double major in painting and in sculpture.
So what was your first sculpture medium?
Well, at Bennington, there was a lot of pressure to do steel sculpture. It had a long tradition of the Green Mountain Boys, Anthony Corot, Isaac Wipkin was teaching there. They were all the big steel guys. And they had a fabulous steel studio, everything you wanted, all the steel and the welding machines and everything. And so that was the first thing, was to learn how to weld, which I immediately became disinterested in. I'm very exacting, and when you weld something, you have to cut it, you weld it, and then if you don't like those hideous welding marks, which look like snails traveling across a surface, you have to grind them. So the process is very tedious, and so it's like printmaking. You know, there's a lot of preparation and care and wiping, and the process to me wasn't immediate enough. So I worked a lot at Bennington with a glue gun.
With a glue gun?
Yes.
Oh, yes?
With a glue gun. And I also hung my pieces. My pieces were projections off the wall, so that was a stable structure. I had the wall. So, and I've pretty much stuck with working off the wall. I enjoy working off the wall. You can control the space. It's frontal and from the side. You don't have to account for the back as well.
Well, all your work is very sensitive.
Thank you. It's and it's pretty small scale. A lot of people have seen photographs and gone, wow. You know, when I see them in real life, they're so tiny. And they're small for two reasons. I like they're personal, and they are a certain size because of me and my body size when I'm working with them. And also working with the materials, with my hands, the proportions seem right for me. And also, they're what I can handle as far as construction. Sculptors always have to build what they have in mind. Painters, they just stretch another canvas. I'll go into Tony's studio and he just stretches another canvas or gets out another piece of paper and he's good to go. Whereas I'll spend all day constructing something and then at the end of the day, and then I'll step to the table saw and cut the left-hand corner off because I didn't really need that section, whereas he could just paint it out. So construction is, you know, something that's always there. If you have it in mind, then you actually have to build it one way or another.
And now you say a lot of these are mounted on metal?
The folded pieces are mounted on aluminum, and then the aluminum is scored and cut.
So it's like sheets of aluminum.
Well, there they are.
Oh, I see. Oh, right.
And I also make models and maquettes because it gets expensive just cutting up aluminum, then deciding that you want to cut off the left-hand corner. Right. So sometimes I do make models. So when you cut it and score it and fold it, you don't really know how it's going to look three-dimensionally. You make a mark and you fold it and it curves so much to the side more than you thought, or it projects so much more than you thought. So there's a little bit of trial and error there in how you want the photograph to wrap around it. So I often do Xeroxes and then work with cardboard to see how it's going to fold. But the working with aluminum is really wonderful. It's very immediate. It's clean. The scoring and folding is very satisfying.
And the sheets you use, it's a thick enough gauge that they stay in place once you've...
They do. Some of them I back with a double sheet or I fold. This one here has, it's long, so it does have a double piece, so it's a little more stable. And then they're just nailed to the wall.
And each one is unique, right? I mean, it's not an addition. You don't.
No. Oh, that would be... whenever I've... even sometimes if I make a model... and I love the model, and the model has a certain feeling about it. And okay, I'm going to make that one. And it's usually bigger than the model. And sometimes when it gets cleaned up or a little bigger, it just loses something. So to do something multiple would really, first it would be boring, but I think it would not be satisfying.
So this is Margaret Soliski, a Hudson artist, one of the many artists who is interviewed on this radio show, the station, by George and myself and Chad Weckler. Art being our principal business here in this town, in one form or another. And you hear it right here on WGXC. Spike Priggen is giving away some gift certificates for his record shop in Catskill. Minimum pledge of $40, you will get a $20 gift certificate. Or a Spike's Record Rack t-shirt, also worth $20. Or a Spike's Record Rack tote bag, also worth $20. All for a $40 minimum pledge.
And for $40, you get a tote bag that you could put a record in it. And you can walk out of this store realizing that you've done something great to that day by helping us continue to be on the radio.
And also helping a local business that's just started up, apparently, Spike Priggen.
Yes, and also helping a local business. I just mentioned it a little while ago that we had a lot of youth radio. Hopefully we'll have more. We've had around 300 hours of youth radio, which is a lot. Approximately 1,000 hours of public and cultural affairs programming. 3,000 hours of music. And 3,000 hours of transmission arts and experimental sound. I've been out to Wave Farm, which is sort of the mother of us all. We're part of Wave Farm. And they're doing some incredibly interesting things out there in terms of expanding the use of sound and the artistic properties of sound. And you can listen to these, what they're up to, I think every night and a lot of weekends. And even if it's something you're not going to want to listen to a lot, it's very interesting just to tune in and listen and see if this is something that you'd be interested in or you might be interested in the future.
I think we're about the only station in the country with this much transmission arts.
Yeah, I think it's amazing.
In terms of hours.
I think it's amazing. I mean, this is one of the things that really drew me to Hudson, was that there in this whole upper Hudson Valley is there are so many people doing so many interesting things. And one of the great pleasures of being involved with this radio station is that Richard and I and Chad get to sit down with people who are doing these things and find out what they're doing and how they're doing it and why they're doing it. And then we have the opportunity to broadcast it. And for you who are interested in these things, to have a chance to listen. But for that to happen, we have to have you use our pledge drive telephone number to make a pledge. And that number is 518-697-7400. Or you can pledge online. You can go to wgxc.org/donate. As I said, all donations are very, very happily received.
And let's add one more address there, George.
Sure.
Mailing address for WGXC is care of Wave Farm at 5662 Route 23 Acre, New York, 12405. And the studio itself, in case you want to visit sometime, I think it'd probably be welcome, our listeners. 369 Warren Street in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church, 4th Street side. Again, that number is 697-7400 for donations.
I had previously done broadcasting work, and it was with a large conglomerate, and there were layers upon layers upon layers of staff, to the point that you could have someone who would bring you your coffee, and then someone else would bring the cream, and someone else would bring the sugar. We don't operate that way here. This is a very bare bones operation. It's very conservatively run financially. And as Richard said, and I would encourage anybody who is in the neighborhood to stop in and see what we're doing.
Or even apply to have a show of your own.
Exactly, and even apply to have a show of your own. I think everybody has something to say. Everybody's experience is different. Everybody's, you know, interests are different, and they're all valid. And so I think everybody who's interested, has something they would like to talk about on the radio, should come in and discuss it with the folks here. And I've only worked out of this radio station here, which is in Hudson, so I've really mainly been involved with Lynn and Alana. And when you come in, you're going to find that they are very welcoming and very wonderful people, and we're very happy to have them. However, in order to continue to have the radio station and to have people like Lynn and Alana and everybody else who works here, we do need, once again, to reach out to you folks, our listeners. And we hope that you will call us at 518-697-7400 or online at wgxc.org/donate.
Okay, shall we have a little more?
Sure.
The interview with Margaret Siliski.
Yeah, that's a great...
A wonderful artist in Hudson who has an opening this Saturday at Davis Wharton Gallery of her sculptures incorporating photographs. Here's Margaret. The part we just heard, Margaret was involved for several years restoring all the stencils at Olana. So she's worked for the entire community in various ways.
I'd like to think that the original piece has something special that perhaps gets lost if it's duplicated. Or I would probably change it. What would happen is I would start to duplicate it, and then I would probably change it just to keep my interest.
You've gone out and taken photographs out mm-hmm. in nature mm-hmm. first.
Right.
And then I guess you print those and you decide how you sort of figure out how you're going to use them.
It's sort of the structure and the landscape go together. You look at a landscape and it sort of suggests how it might be folded or where you might take out a section. There really is, I can't say that I put up the photograph and say, okay, I'm going to make a piece with this one now. They sort of happen together, and they happen just in the process. Most of my work happens in the process. Sometimes I do working drawings where I'm really measuring stuff out on tracing paper, and I know I'm going to cut so many pieces on the saw this size. And because I do work in the scale, I really draw it out to scale on the tracing paper. So they are really working drawings where it's going to be cut to size. But for the most part, it's just I had that photograph mounted on there and then sliced out the center and shifted it to the right. You know, it's always wanting to manipulate the landscape. I've never been happy with just mounting a photograph and saying, that's it. And even now, I've started to cut up the photographs and alter the photographs themselves.
Do you make them around here, the photos? I mean, is this where you...
A lot of them are Hudson River. There's the buoys you probably recognize that they pull out of the water in the winter. This take a lot of photographs of Alana at Alana. But this is Paoli Gardens in San Francisco, and this is the quarries in Gloucester, Connecticut.
You do your own printing?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's another thing that confines the size, is that my printer is only this big. And because I'm not really a photographer, I have this reluctance to commit myself to one of those giant printers that have tanks that suck down $200 worth of ink. Because the other thing is that, you know, I'm not printing all the time. So then you have problems with things clogging. So I've committed myself to this printer that takes enough ink. And the other thing is that I can print in pieces if I need to. Like this could have been printed in three pieces. So I can still get the scale since I'm going to cut it up anyway. So I don't need to pull a photograph all in one piece. And I'll often print it out on our little printer in Tony's studio and just a piece of Xerox to see how it is. I've never been able to have somebody else print or fabricate for me. And I ran into trouble when I started to make these pieces here with the plexiglass and these two over here, especially the aqua one, because you see the plexiglass is cut out in the center. And I initially did that with Mylar, where I tinted the Mylar, but the Mylar buckled, depending on if it's hot or cold or humid. So I had to figure out how to cut the plexiglass, and, you know, I could have somebody do that for me. But that will cost money, and you're committing to the shape, and then you get it in your studio, and then what happens is what I said, you want to cut off the left-hand side.
Right.
So I found this material is not actually plexiglass, it's called Lexan, and so it's much more flexible, you don't have to worry about it shattering or chipping, and so I'm able to cut those on the saws, on the bandsaw. I could have had somebody, I don't know that I could have had somebody actually give me that color, but I could have them, you know, they do this digital cutting now, which is amazing, where they laser cut.
Now you're having this show at Davis Orton.
Yes.
And how many pieces will you have?
Well, I have the map of the gallery, and I have 16 pieces on the map. But I went over to the gallery on Saturday, and the problem with sculpture, and sculpture hangs on the wall, is that it projects. So when you have a corner, you think of putting a few pieces on the corner, but then on the other side, the view can be obscured because the one on the opposite wall is projecting into it. So I think what I'll do is take the pieces over and then just start installing them and see. And also, I'm conflicted about doing just the folded metal landscape pieces or including also these more recent pieces with the plexiglass, because they're very different pieces. Of course, the artists, they always seem dramatically different, but perhaps to somebody else, it looks like.
Well, no, it looks like a different tack.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started photographing industrial sites in the wintertime. Because they have such interesting things in them. They have the Troy waterfront has these beautiful blue tanks. And when you see them in the snow, they're just fantastic. And so I started photographing colored machinery in an otherwise bland winter landscape. And those pieces of machinery really pop out in color. I also started to feel like I really wanted to work with color. Which there's not a lot of color in these pieces. So I imbued that one with yellow. But that color is almost like a whole other material. And I tend to keep things at a minimum. So material and color, photograph, how many elements do you want playing off of each other? I tend to keep it very minimal.
Well, in this particular one, you're using color on the depth of the piece to reflect on the wall.
Yeah, that's interesting. That that comes out of this piece over here. This piece was done first, and that's taken from the landfill in Manhattan, probably from the Whitney Museum or maybe from Uptown where they were I don't know if they're demolishing or building this, but you know, there's that plastic fence there forming the L. And I then picked it up and used it in the piece. It's a diptych to the piece to the left. And I really liked that iridescent pink. But it wasn't in this photograph. But I thought I would just put it in over there. And then I loved the way it glowed on the wall. I've always wanted to use lights to put lights in pieces for transparency. And now, of course, you can get little lights that you can, in fact. You don't have to have that cord hanging down from the monitor like we used to have to have.
Those cords were always a distraction.
They were. I can't ignore something like that. I don't know how people were able to. And then all those monitors that Vito Acconci used were so ugly. Now you walk into a room and it's wrap-around, wall-to-wall film, and it's just wonderful for people who are making film now and never loved video monitors. Well, in digital photography, that's when I first started to use photography, and I'd take all these, because I'm not really interested in photography. I think, again, it's like working in steel. It has a process and a knowledge and f-stops and exposures and shutters and all the stuff that just doesn't interest me. So when digital photography came out with zoom lenses, I have a little pocket digital camera that zooms like crazy so that I can crop, because I do a lot of cropping. And it just liberated me. It was immediate. You could put it in the computer. You had it. And I do a minimal amount of photoshopping, but I mostly like to zoom in on what interested me in the first place. Digital photography has been great for non-photographers, and it really makes photographers furious because they know they have skills, they know their medium so well, the quality of a print, the focus, the everything is so critical in a beautiful photograph, and I respect it and appreciate it so much, but it's not what I need. If it's like a little too green, a little out of focus, I'll use it. Well, we can certainly end this now, and I hope that you'll see the show at Davis Orton, and it opens on the 16th and closes on, I think, the 8th of July. I'm very enthusiastic about showing there. I think they show interesting photographs. It's not just a photography gallery. There's variations on photography, and there's also the artist books that she does. And Karen Davis also is a photographer and does photographs I really admire.
Well, thank you very much, Margaret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're welcome.
So, WJXC, that was Margaret Soliski. These programs are archived at WJXC.org as well, and you can find many fascinating interviews over the course of the years that we've been going here. Now, what, 8 or 9 years, I guess?
I guess, yeah. So I guess those are done by, I guess, around 100 community programmers, of which you and I are two. So the base that is drawn on for the people who do the work and provide the programming is wide. There are a large number of these people. I have heard that I think the youngest programmer is 6 or something. Is that right?
Oh, is that right?
I think so. It's some number like that. And I think there's somebody who is 84, 85, something of that sort, who also does it. And then people all the way in between. And if you come in, you'll see that it's a diverse, very interesting, very vibrant bunch of people who are committed to doing this.
With quite a variety of programming as well. I mean, many different types of music, jazz, classical, hip-hop, whatever. And people who are very knowledgeable about these things and play lots of music that you're certainly not going to hear on commercial radio.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I think the other thing that's exciting about it is that We don't have a corporate style. We don't have a particular way of doing things, and each programmer is different. The one thing that they all, I think everybody has, is they know their subject matter and they're enthusiastic, and I think that comes through. There's some great programming that I find really exciting. For example, there are shows in Spanish and in Haitian Creole, and then there are programs on health and welfare. Richard, I, and Chad do a lot on, and Robert Tomlinson also, do a lot on local arts, and then there's a big emphasis on covering meetings and political activities in this part of the Hudson.
Hudson. Even the news with Tom Rowe is
That's
really
right.
quite excellent. I mean, you're certainly hearing stories here that you don't hear on iHeart or whatever they call it nowadays, and that takes a lot of effort and a lot of commitment. So if you can please help us out with a pledge, 518-697-7400 or online, WGXC.org/donate. And once again, there are some premiums involved, but do it out of the goodness of your heart.
So without you, our listeners, we would not be here. So we hope that you will take the opportunity to get in touch with us. I think that we will tell you once again how to do that. And that is, the telephone number is 518-697-7400. Or you can pledge online at wgxc.org/donate. And Richard, you have the snail mail address, right?
Yes, the care of Wave Farm, 5662 Route 23, Accra, New York. So shall we have some music?
We could have some music, but let me just, before we do that, I have this list in front of me, which is really incredible, of some of the locations where we've had remote broadcasts. And I was talking about the fact that there's a lot of coverage here of community affairs. And so I'd like to just read a list here of town halls where community events or community things involving community activities that have been broadcast from these town halls. And they include Cairo, Athens, Greenport, Hudson, the Greene County Legislature in Catskill, and the Columbia County Board of Supervisors. Now, I cannot substantiate this by saying I've done any research on this or have any basis for the statement I'm going to make, but I think it would be very hard to find another radio station which has that kind of coverage of...
And these days, it's really... back in the day when I worked at the Independent and we had 12 people in the newsroom covering all the towns, these things were in the print media. But now the Independent is gone. The remaining media don't have the resources. And recordings like this are the only coverage you're getting some of these things. And important issues are being covered, such as the Hudson waterfront and various machinations in Germantown or Stuyvesant or wherever. So... please help us continue to do that.
You know, and those of you like me who are frequenters of farmers markets, we've been at the Hudson Market. We've broadcast on the Hudson Market. We broadcast from the Catskill Market. And we've also covered a number of the broadcasts from a number of the restaurants here in the Blue Pite in Chatham, the Red Dot Restaurant and Bar here in Hudson, Kellner's Cafe in Hudson, Dalton's Donuts in Cairo, Hilo in Catskill and the Little Deb's Oasis in Hudson, among others. So.
Now, my next show, or coming up very soon anyway, is an interview with the great cellist Yehuda Hanani, who we're privileged to have in this area. He produces the Close Encounters with Music at Tanglewood and the Mahewi. Recently, he played this piano trio. He and a pianist and violinist.
Let me interrupt you for a second. How does he give a lot of interviews? I don't think so.
No, I've known him for years. We've already discussed doing it.
Yeah. All right. So this is something, I think, something really important, and that is that there are some really exciting artistic personalities here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're able often to sort of get them in quiet moments. I did a show a while ago with Twyla Tharp, for example, and it's you don't get those people often, and they're exciting to interview and they're exciting to listen to.
And it's nice that they've got an outlet for themselves as well. I'm going to play a little of this Mendelssohn just because it's so utterly incredible. Mendelssohn was not only a composer and conductor and pianist, also a skilled painter and championship gymnast.
Really?
Yes. And this, we're not going to hear much, but just to kind of get a feel. And again, as George was saying, we have these incredibly talented people in the area. And the station here helps make people aware of these things. The violinist with Yehudi last month, his old violin was a Stradivarius. Now he has
his old violin.
The Zygmunto, which is considered even superior to those Strads. So this is piano trio number 1 in D minor, part of the finale.